So I just want to share that Jane is coming home on Tuesday. Thank God. So I'm a different person when, you know, she's not nearby. And I noticed that there's some negative side effects associated with her being away. For instance, like last Sunday, not having Jane here to kind of monitor me, I just walked out after doing the talk, just walked out and went home. And I realized that's probably not the good thing to do when Jane's not here and I'm the only minister in the house, so I should hang around a little while probably. Anyway, so she's coming back, and so all will be well then. She's planning a great series for the fall, by the way. It's called What's in the Way is the Way. So we're going to be working with that book, so that's exciting. Also, I just wanted to mention that when she's gone, I busy myself. It's not like I'm just a sick puppy hanging out, you know, lost. I'm pretty active, and I just want to share a bit about what's been going on for me. First of all, here, sorry about the picture, but this is a picture of our property in Kettle Falls, and I've spent the last week and a half mowing with one of those little weed eater mowers. You know, it really, really, really needs a brush hog, but you know, I don't know anybody in Kettle Falls, and the only person I was able to call, his tractor broke down. So in the meantime, I had David Lineweber and Reverend Margie Hyatt, they came up with me earlier in the week, and we also mapped out where one of our buildings is going to go. We're going to build a shop and move a tiny home onto our property, but I just wanted to give you a sense of the effort that's involved. You know, David is now my mentor. He's mentoring me to be my own contractor, and as you can imagine, our plan is to move to Kettle Falls by no later than March 15th of next year, because that's when our rent house will be complete, and so we'll be relocating there. And so, in order to do that, we got to put a shop on the property. So there's where the shop is going to go, and then we're also we purchased a tiny home, and we'll have that moved up there as well. And so the whole project, as you can imagine, starting with bare land and there being no electricity and having to, you know, get the water and the well to work and the electricity there and the septic system and all the things that have to happen, not to mention that there's money involved. And as you can see, it's quite the project. And actually, the reason why I'm sharing this is because it's something that I thrive. I thrive in the arena of complexity. When I have a project that is very complex, has many moving parts, it causes me to have to really pay attention to details in my life in a way that I'm not always present. And so my experience in doing this, while it's something that I've never done before, I've never done all the things that I'm describing, it's something that I'm excited about because I have someone like David in my life who I can call, and I get the support that I need. And that's what I love about spiritual community, is that we are able to find ourselves in life situations, and from time to time when it's needed, we get the support that we need. And that's what's really cool about a spiritual community. And what I'm also noticing is that in no uncertain terms, you know, we are charged with being the contractors of our own life experience, aren't we? I mean, think about it. It's up to us to decide what kind of life we're going to create for ourselves. Now we can be in the experience of believing that our life happens to us, and certainly this is part of our journey to awakening. We begin with believing that life happens to us, and we find ourselves trying to fix or control or otherwise have things be a certain way, because when life is happening to us and it's not the experience that we want, we are compelled to try to have things be a certain way or to control what's happening in the outer, and we know that that's a futile experience. But when we recognize that we're in charge of creating how we're going to be with our own life experience, then we recognize, well, life is not against me. Life is for me. But we have to be able to do what is ours to do in order to have the experience of our life being for us. One of the things that we can count on is that when we inadvertently have someone or something against us, we can count on, whenever we're in that kind of experience, that we're going to be in some degree of suffering in our life. I mean, how many of us have been in the experience of having somebody else the matter with us? It's not a pleasant experience. How many of us have had ourselves the matter with us? And that's not a very pleasant experience either. But when we awaken to the awareness that it's up to us, in no uncertain terms, to take ownership of how we're being with our life experience. And that includes what our experience is in no uncertain terms. So how we are showing up with our life and how we are being with what we're having is our life experience, right? Our reaction to our life is our life. And if we want to have a different quality of our life, we have to do things differently to have a different experience. And so in Unity, we have foundation principles which guide how we're using our creative process. In other words, our thoughts, our beliefs, our feelings, how we're being with what we're having creates our personal experience. I mean, that's not rocket science so much as it is something that we have to keep in mind. What I'm thinking about, how I'm feeling, and how I'm showing up with what I'm having is going to determine how my life is unto me. And if I don't recognize that I have the capacity to have my life for me, and in the context of knowing that my life is for me, be able to activate dimensions of beingness or aspects of the creative process that live independent of my small self, when I recognize I can access a dimension of my being that has as its intent to bring me into the fulfillment of my purpose and passion, then there's something that I have to do differently in order to allow that capacity, that movement of spirit, of presence through my life. I have to shift out of believing that someone or something out there is a limit or withholding some form of good in my life to recognizing that I am in charge of how I'm going to be with whatever it is that I'm having. And when I can be in that intent to own my capacity to make, create, build that which is in the context of who and what I've come here to be, then my quest is rather to focus on how I'm being with what's happening in my life rather than how what's happening in my life is with me. There has to be some kind of shift within myself. I love this quote. I mentioned this last Sunday, this quote from Dr. Joe Dispenza. The quantum field responds not to what we want. It responds to who we are being. So if we think about our intent to create a life that we want and recognize that the universe doesn't respond to what we want, but who we are, how do we create what we want? We have to align our feeling, our state of being, with the understanding that what we're desiring in our life that brings us into the capacity to fulfill our purpose and passion, that's already given in no uncertain terms. We already possess the capacity to enter into the activity of spirit that uses our life as an extension of bringing forth the greater good. It's just that we are out of phase with that reality. We're out of phase with that reality by virtue of how we are being with whatever is happening in our life experience. So I want to use an example of looking at the intent to create something that one wants, but recognizing that the activity of trying to get something, where you're trying to accomplish something in the outer, is less about trying to get something out there, more about aligning and attuning oneself to a dimension of beingness that draws what is desired or needed to oneself. So here's an example. One of the things that we were needing in order to fulfill this intent to move up to Kettle Falls, we were able to buy a tiny house, but then the tiny house is only 399 square feet. And we live in a 1,700 square foot house, and we have also a storage unit up at one of the storage places with my airplane in it. And so we needed this large shop in order to park our cars, put the airplane in, and store all the things that we can't fit into the 399 square foot home. And so we were able to get financing for the house. That was not a challenge. But then when it came to becoming able to borrow money for the shop, we ran into some roadblocks. And so basically, on our way out to start driving for a convention, we received word that very day that we were not qualified for this loan because our income to debt ratio was way out of whack. You know all about that stuff? Okay, you've been there before, right? Okay, so I don't have to fill in all those details, thanks. So if you've ever needed so much money in order to get something that you want, and then someone says no, you automatically go to your own sense of not enough, right? And then your mind wants to figure out how to get more. Well, that's the tendency, that's what happens when we're conditioned to believe that in order to acquire something, we have to go get it in order to be able to satisfy or resolve the need. Our need was to have this building built. And so in the moment of hearing that no or getting that no, in our practice, so now I'm wanting to share how you be with a situation that is a no, for instance. So a no could be simply just something that's not working the way you want it. It's an obstacle to your effort to try to get something that you want. And I'm trying to share how we're using this principle of being instead of trying to do getting more in order to feel more. So that's the conundrum. How do I refrain from trying to get more in order to feel more? I have to feel more first before I begin to allow something else to happen in my life. So that's where we're going. So in the presence of this no, we're not able to get the financing. In that moment, we had to welcome it. We had to welcome the no, because in the context of manifesting a greater good, there's two things that you have to avoid doing, and that is you have to avoid trying to go to how is this going to happen, and you have to avoid going to when is this going to happen. Because the moment that you go to how can something happen or when is this happen, you disconnect from the felt experience of already having it. You understand? So the moment that we have to have resolved how is this going to happen, like how are we going to get this money, or when are we going to be able to afford this, you know, we put everything in time, everything out there. And so the rule of thumb is that you can't do that. You have to stay with the feeling. Okay, so what is the feeling that's needed to be present? And that is, the first feeling is gratitude. Whenever you have a no, the first thing you have to move towards is to welcome the no. And so oftentimes when we get a no, the whole aspect of our cognitive process kind of collapses, and then we have to refigure out how to accomplish something. But what if the no is simply a step in the process? And the moment that we welcome the no, all of a sudden something else reveals itself that only that step with the no could bring forth. Well, in that experience for us, it was contacting the loan officer and saying, asking her, tell us what we need to do in order to be in alignment with the very system that requires us to have a 38% income debt ratio, not 55%. Well, one, of course, is reduce your ratio. So that was the first authentic action that we had to decide to do. How can we immediately begin to tell the universe that we're willing to do whatever it takes to be in alignment with what is required of us in order for the flow to happen, in order for the sense that it's all working together for the greater good, that the no is simply a step in the process. So we immediately recalled that we had signed up for Dr. Joe Dispenza's week-long intensive in Portland this month. Actually, it was happening in 2 weeks. We were scheduled to go in 2 weeks, but that experience would have cost us about $6,000 that we would have put on our credit card, and we would have gladly charged that amount because of the benefit of that experience. But the authentic action was to take ownership of our excessive debt, and so we had to cancel that trip in order to tell the universe we're in integrity, we're taking the baby steps to allow this to happen. So we had to let go of the shop. We have the tiny home, but we have this no, but we have this capacity to see our way through to being able to resolve the income debt ratio. It's just going to take time. But we can't go there. We have to stay with the feeling of being welcoming what is now, what are the steps that we must take now, and stay connected to the felt sense that this is coming to us. This is coming to us. So then we went off to Unity Village and then to our Unity convention. And in the course of connecting up with some people, I met with the CFO of Unity Worldwide Ministries, his name is Bruce Bracuzzi, and he's the guy in charge of our pension fund, and he's also a Q coach. He's also one of our Q coaches. So I sat down, Jane and I sat down with Bruce and said, look at, I have some money in my pension fund, and I think I can borrow about $30,000. I need about $100,000, but tell me what I can borrow. And he said, well, you shouldn't borrow any money out of your pension fund. And I said, okay, but, he said, but you can take out the money tax-free. I said, what? He said, well, yes, you're a minister and you have a manse allowance, and so long as you are spending money on your manse, on your ministerial residence, it's tax deductible. You don't pay taxes. This is your money that you've put in over the years. And so, in other words, what he said is that you can have all the money that you want to complete this project, tax-free. So what I'm trying to express is that for the months and the years of consternation of living in this sense of not enough, of believing that we couldn't afford or make something happen, it was always the case that we had whatever it was necessary to be able to accomplish this. It's just that we couldn't see that or experience the fullness of that until we were able to be present to the no's, to those moments when the roadblock came up and we were challenged to not go to less than because of that, but instead staying connected to what our intent was, which was to bring forth needed and necessary good in our life, but to do it in a way that really empowered us to use our spiritual practice. And so, part of the challenge for us in any kind of spiritual practice is to reconcile the part of us that is making something against us or creating an obstacle or a problem in our life from the dimension of ourself that has to reconcile both the problem that we have and what we're trying to create that is in alignment with our purpose and passion. So we have to have the ability to both move towards a greater good that is calling us into a greater expression and fullness of who and what we are, but the process also requires of us to hospice those aspects of ourself that are no longer serving the greater good, and to midwife that dimension of ourself that is yet to open to and express the capacity that needs to emerge in greater robustness if we are to really have a tipping point that moves us into knowing that our life has always been for us. And so when we know that, when we know that our life has always been for us, and when we are aware of that as being the reality of our life, then we can begin to look at those moments in our life where we have something else happening, where we have somebody the matter with us, let's say, and be in the process of reconciling, well, how is it possible that I'm having this experience when the reality is, the greater reality is, that it's always for me? So consider this. How would your life be different if you lived absolutely in the sure and certain knowing that life is for you? I want you to think about that for a few seconds, a few moments, because it's important for you to think about this. How would your life be different? What would change for you right now if all of a sudden there's nothing in you that could ever make somebody else or yourself or any condition the matter with you? What would change in your life? Tell me.
You'll go later.
What else?
Relationships.
What else would change?
Peace in the heart. Flowing.
What else? We can see that our life would be different, can't we? We can. And yet we languish in such powerlessness. And then we mortgage our well-being on whether or not circumstances are going to play out the way they need to. And when we recognize that our life has always been for us, that our essence, that who we truly are, is a localized version of presence awakening to its omni-selfness or omni-selflessness. I just invented a new word. It happens when I'm... So if you can see your life would be different in the context of knowing now that it's for me, then in every moment when you are having inadvertently some contrary belief to that principle, then you could work with the situation because you know how you're being with it is the problem, not the situation. Because if the situation is for us, then it's about finding the way in which we can align with it so as having it for us, we do all the things that when something is a part of what we need, instead of pushing it away. So as we recognize that our effort is to focus on how we're being with what's happening as opposed to getting something that we want, then the focus then becomes on not needing anything out there to be different, but to begin to find the change within oneself that enables one to be in the experience of staying connected without needing the outer evidence, staying connected to what is pulling one into an expression of one's purpose and passion, or into building and developing retirement property, whatever is the task. We can do it in the context of knowing that there's no obstacle that is not capable of gifting us in a way that moves us one step closer to the fulfillment of our purpose. So whenever my talk sort of runs out, like it did, just did... So part of my challenge in this, something's happening to me, I guess, is what I'm wanting to say, is that over the course of the last 3 years since my cancer, and I'm 3 years now in remission, by the way. Thanks. I'm feeling like my mind, my brain doesn't want me to conjure up what I think I should talk about every Sunday, but rather be present to the energy that's here. And so I'm letting go of more and more trying to figure out what it is that I'm supposed to share, and instead be more present to speaking to this energy that we're trying to cultivate together, that it's really important that we understand that these spiritual principles work. And it's important to also understand that it's hard. This is not easy work. You know, and as a contractor or a subcontractor of our own spiritual life, you know, our own life, you know, we will make mistakes. And we'll hit our thumb with our hammer, and we'll forget to use the level and square the way we should, and consequently, when we build something, it'll be half a bubble off maybe. But if we know that the effort is not to fix something that's broken out there, but rather to reclaim that which is latent or otherwise hidden to us, and to access that dimension of ourself that knows no boundaries or limits in the outer. That's what we can become for each other, is a community that holds that understanding of why we are here together in the context of spiritual community. So that's all I know. Thank you. God bless you.
Heck, I've been a half bubble.